Okay, this Shabbos is jam-packed. This Shabbos is a Shabbos like none other. This is the mother of all Shabbosites. Okay, it's Parsha Sayikra. It's Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. And it's Parsha HaChodesh. We take out... If you forgot to say par, it's a good question. No, I don't know. I don't know. The poskim speak about this. I don't remember what it says. If you forgot to say para last week, what do you do this week? Is there a tashlumin for para this week? I remember reading about this. No, not so simple. I do not remember. The poskim discussed this. I remember reading about it recently. I forgot what it says. Okay, but Rabbi, so let's begin. This week is Parshas Vayikra. It's Parshas Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, which means we're going to learn the second Sefer Torah for Rosh Chodesh. And once already we lay for Rosh Chodesh, we also lay for Shabbos. Really, the truth is, every single week we really should lain, take out a second Sefer Torah, and lain the Korbanos for Shabbos. Why don't we do so? So there are different reasons. And one of the reasons is because it's only two psukim, and you do not take out a Sefer Torah for two psukim. But this Shabbos, when we're already taking out a Sefer Torah for Rosh Chodesh, we chaperein, and we begin the Kriya with Uviyoin HaShabbos. So really, right off the bat, there are three lanings so far. Three lanings. Let's try to count with me how many lanings we have. We have Parshas Vayikra. Then we have the laning of Shabbos Kodesh. Uviyoyim HaShabbos. A bonus. And then we lane Uviyoshei Chod Sheichem the Korbanos Sof Rosh Chodesh. And then we take out a third Sefer Torah, and we lane Parshas HaChodesh. HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the beginning of a new year, so that's already a fourth Kriya. Correct? It's a fourth Kriya. Parashas Rosh, Parashas Vayikra, then it's Shabbos, Uviyoyim HaShabbos, special extra bonus, Uviyoyim HaShabbos. What? This week is Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, and then it's Uviroshei Chod Sheichem. You only take out one, you take out a second, in the second Sefer Torah, you are really laning two separate inyanim. You're laning the parashiyos of Shabbos. You start with Uviyoyim HaShabbos. Really, we should do this every single week. Every single Shabbos, we should really learn Uviyoyim HaShabbos. The reason why we do not do so is because it's only two psukim. But being that this week, we're anyway taking out a second Sefer Torah for Rosh Chodesh, Shohi Chaperein, we also read Uviyoyim HaShabbos. And then we then lay Uviroshei Chod Sheichem. We then take out a third Sefer Torah, and we lay what? We lay HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodoshim. This is what the Torah began with. First Rashi in Chumash, Torah started with Rosh Chodeshim. Okay, we're not finished yet. And then, it's not Aminig Nusuch Ashkenaz, but there are Kihilois that lane the Parash of the Nesim. They're goyal. They don't take out a separate Sefer Torah. Some do it mamish right then and there. There are different minhagim. There are many different minhagim how to lane the Parash of the Nesim. Among us, Ashkenazim, we don't do it all together. Period. But among Sardin and Nusach Sard, some of them, not all of them, they do it. Some of them do it when davening is over. After davening is over, they take out Sefer Torah for the Aron HaKodesh. And some, before they put away the Sefer Torah, they're goylel the Sefer Torah to Parshas Nasai, and they read the Parsh of the Nasi. So that would be the fifth Kriya. But guess what? It's the first day. So on the first day of that, where does the parsha of Nesim begin with? So there are many different minhagim. You have to ask in your local shtibl what they do. It's not at all simple. You would expect that they should start. Rabbi Sai, there's a lot of noise outside. It's the noise outside is very hard to compete with. So please, this week, let's try to keep it down to a very, very bare minimum. We then come to parsha of the Nesim. Okay, please, Rabbi Isaac, please.
Be quiet.
Can we come now to the parish of the Nesim? And the first parish is where it begins. Vayya makrib bayoyim harishnes karbonoi nachshoin ben amina davlamate yud. That is really where we should start from, pasuk yud base. And indeed, there are many kihilois who do lane from the Nesim. They begin with pasuk yud base. However, There are other kihilois whose their custom is to go back and lane from the beginning of the perek, Vayihi biyoin kalois Moshe lehakim es hamishkan. Being that we don't just lay in the first nasi, we lay in the beginning of the section when the Moshe erected the Mishkan, and there's a whole parsha here. And what's the parasha? The parasha begins with the collective gift of the Nesiim, which is the Eglas Tzav. So this is a kriya, a special kriya that's done on the first day of Rosh Chodesh. In addition to laying the parasha of the Nesiim, the first Nasi, the Nasi of Nachshon Ben Amidah, we also laying the gift of the Nesiim, the Eglas Tzav. What are the Eglas Tzav? Special wagons that were covered. Why did the Nesiim give a gift of 6 wagons that were covered, and special coverings with 12 animals to pull the wagons? Because this is a very powerful limud. When Klal Yisrael travel in the desert, when they travel in the desert, this is Maisa of a Simon Labanim. This is a Simon that is going to be Golus, and in Golus, Klal Yisrael is going to travel. It's going to travel and travel from country to country, from location to location in the years of goals, until we ultimately reach our final destination, until we return, all of us return to Eretz Yisrael. When you travel, you can travel in an open wagon, or you can travel in a closed wagon. You can put your moving materials on a flatbed truck. You imagine, ever see someone who goes and they travel, they move from... They move from Brooklyn to Flatbush. They move from Flatbush to Lakewood, Flatbush to New Jersey to Teaneck.
Wow.
So you go and you put on your you call someone, and the moving truck, they come with a flatbed truck. Mm. And on the flatbed truck, they put your bed, they put your television, they put all your computer, they put your brake front and your svarim. And they just take some straps and they strap it all down on the flatbed truck. Okay, or they can come with a regular big van that has walls. So what do you prefer? When you call a moving truck to take you from Flatbush to wherever you plan to go, what kind of truck do you prefer? The flatbed truck or the truck that has walls? And I'll tell you what, the flatbed truck is a fraction of the price. The moving service that used the flatbed truck will charge you a fraction of the price of what the moving company that has walls. So what would you do? Which it's big Nesoyin, right? What would you do? And your property,
if it's raining, or
it's not going to rain. Beautiful weather. It's going to be 70 degrees. And there's insurance for everything, and they've never had a mishap. They have a perfect record. Rabbi said, what would you do? Would you use the flatbed truck, or would you use a regular truck? And it's a lot cheaper. So what's the issue? The issue is, well, when they're putting all my stuff in the truck, I don't want people to see what my bed looks like, and what my furniture looks like, and what sarb I have. And I certainly don't want them to see my television and my other utilities. I don't want them to see all these things. So thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. It's no one's business, right? I want some dignity. I'm entitled to my dignity when I travel from one location to another. Isn't that true? So therefore, I don't. No one's business to see what I got. The whole block should come out. Oh, I see what you got over here. Wow, all these years you've been hoarding all the goods. Great, you should have invited us to your house to have some fun.
Not good for shidduchim.
Right, it's not good for shidduchim when they're going to discover what you got in there. I want my dignity, and I'm entitled to my dignity. No, so therefore, I think most people would be willing to pay a lot more money to go and have a little dignity and put their stuff in a private truck. Klal Yisrael, when they traveled in the Midbar, they took with them the Mishkan. They traveled the 42 Masois, 48 Masois, or 42 Masois, until they built the Mishkan. They traveled. They took the Mishkan apart. So they could put the Mishkan in a flatbed truck, or they could put the Mishkan in a truck that has walls. So they were planning, Klal Yisrael, they were pressed for money. They were not wealthy people. I mean, they had money, but it was not something that they were going to do. They were willing to put all the Mishkan on flatbed trucks. Along came the Nesiim, the princes of the Shvatim, and they said, it's not Makovedik. The Klal Yisrael, it's not dignified that the Mishkan should travel on flatbed trucks. Dignity. We're going to donate. We're going to spend our own money to donate for Klal Yisrael the most expensive wagons, which are covered, eglas tzav. Tzav means covered, in order to maintain the kvoidon shel Yisrael. And this by itself is a very powerful limud musar of what is the role of a nasi. The first thing we find about a nasi, we don't find very much what they did. What did the nasim do the whole day? What did they do? They sat in their office. They paskin shilas? No, that was with the Sanhedrin. What was their role? What's the role of a nasi in Klal Yisrael? We know very little what they did. But one thing it says explicitly. So what public service? What do politicians do the whole day?
Listen to their complaints.
They read letters. They read the letters that the people send in. You learn from this pasuk here an incredible chiddush. Since this is one of the only things that are recorded, the primary role of a nasi is to preserve the kvoidon shel Yisrael, the dignity of Klal Yisrael. Now, there's a lot to learn. Lahavil elif alfi havdalos to learn. There's something to learn from Trump. Trump's campaign was built on the principle of to make America great again. He's sick and tired of America should be bozui, should be despised, should be lowly among the nations. Adarava, we're the ones that are the Americans, the ones that are doing chesed to the whole world. There should be some dignity in America. Make America great again. That's a very powerful concept. It's not something to be taken lightly. And he promotes this all the time. This is what he says. America first. America first. The kvoidon of who do I represent? I represent the citizens of America. It is my duty, it is my obligation to elevate their dignity, their honor. It's 100% true. And you see a makar for this. This is what the role of the Nesi'im. What does it say about the Nesi'im? They donated for Klal Yisrael eglas tzav. When we travel in the Midbar, when we travel in Golis, mice of a similar banim. Dignity. There should be dignity for Klal Yisrael. We're not just paupers. We're not just lowlifes. Kvoidon shel Yisrael. It demands something special. That's what they did, and the minhag Yisrael by some, not all, is once already you're laning the parsha of the first nasi, the nasi of Nachshon ben Aminadav on the first day of Rosh Chodesh. You don't just start there; you start with the role of the nasiim, the kavodon shel Yisrael. There's a very special laning tomorrow. You're not just laning the first nasi; you're laning a parsha. Well, not everyone lanes this, okay? We don't lane this, but those who lane it from a Sefer Torah, especially those who lane it from the Sefer Torah before they put it back, they don't even put back the Sefer Torah until they first go and they lane this, is the Kvoidon Shel Yisrael. And it doesn't stop there. Then there's another minuk. Why start with, once you're ready going back to lane, you should start with Birchas Koyhanim. Okay, the Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So that's a whole different parasha. It's a whole different parsha, going back all the way back to Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Rabbeinu, Daber Elayron Yelbon of Lemar Koy Sivarechu Es Bnei Yisrael Omar Lohem Birchas Koyhanim. And how appropriate is it to lay Birchas Koyhanim tomorrow when we're starting Parshas Vayikra, and Vayikra is the Chumash of the Koyhanim. The Koyhanim are our representatives to bring the Korbanos. They live and serve in the Beis HaMikdash. It's their Chumash. It's their parsha. So how beautiful it is that on this week's parsha we're learning also the Kaim. So if I'm not mistaken, Sach HaKol from the Sefer Torah, we're learning tomorrow 7 different inyanim. On a regular Shabbos, we only learn once. One thing, the parsha. Zehu, the parsha Sashavua. Tomorrow, it's unbelievable what tomorrow is. Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and how all of these things coincide. We're laying tomorrow 7 major inyanim. We're starting off a new Chumash Vayikra. We're laying the parish of Shabbos. We're laying the parish of Rosh Chodesh. We're laying parishas HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chodoshim. That's already 4. No, Shabbos, 4. Vayikra, Shabbos, Uviyom HaShabbos, that's a bonus. Because that's not Rosh Chodesh, we don't normally lay in that, and it's not Rosh Chodesh, it's a bonus. The fact that we start two psukim back, Uviyom HaShabbos, Shnei Chilos, and Bnei Shatimim is a bonus. Every Shabbos we should really lay in Uviyom HaShabbos, but we don't. But being that this week we take out a sefer Torah to lay the Rosh Echad Sheichem, so we already go back and we lay the two psukim. So parish VaYikra, the parish of Shabbos, the parish of Rosh Chodesh, the parish and parishas Bo of Achodesh Zelachem Rosh Chodashim, the parish of Nachshoin Ben Aminadav Lamata Yehuda. That's number 5. The parasha of the Eglas Sof, the Kavod and Shel Yisrael, and number 7, Birchas Kohanim, for those who do it. Not everyone does those last three. Okay, those last three, not everyone does. Some don't do it at all. Some do it when davening is over. They take out a Sefer Torah Mamish from the Heichal after davening is over and they lay in these three parashios tomorrow. And some have the minig that you should not take out a Sefer Torah for no reason. So once already you took out the Sefer Torah for Kriyas HaTorah, you don't put it back. And before you daven Musaf, you goylel it to parashas Nosai and you lay in these three parashios. So it comes out that tomorrow 7 separate inyanim are being read from a Sefer Torah. That's unbelievable. That's not normal. This is a parish that's one of a kind. And then you lay in the Haftarah. In addition, you lay in the Haftarah, which deals with the Yemos HaMashiach. And you want to go, say, 8. You top it all off, you lay in parish number 8. What's the number 8? The Haftarah from Yecheskel, which we learned about, the end of Yecheskel, that describes what life is going to be like in the times of Mashiach. The Nasi and the various Kurbanos, the Kurbanos of the Melech HaMashiach, of how things are going to appear, of the ultimate Hischachus. HaChoydezelechem Rosh Chodashim, in the Haftarah we focus on another Hischachus, another renewal that will occur in the end of days in the times of Mashiach. That's like another special type of lading from the Haftarah, which tops it off 8. So you have to pay attention tomorrow and count 8 special kriyas. It's also 3 Sifrei Torah. There's a tradition, there's a legend that whenever you take out 3 Sifrei Torah, it's an Eis Ratzon. It's a very, very holy time when you open up the Aron HaKodesh to take out 3 Sifrei Torah. And if there's ever a day when a person should pay close attention and read with Kavana all of the things that we say before we take out the Sefer Torah, starting with Vayihi Ba'av HaRachamim, Vayihi Bin Soya HaOroin, and Bruch Shmei, Gadlu, Shema Yisrael, and Galu, and going down the entire, Yahalu, Galu, going down the entire list, whatever you say in your base, like we say in the Shul, whatever you say in Shul, it's a Messiah that when you take it, open up the Orin for 3 Sifrei Torah, this is a very holy Ace Rotzayin. The heavens are open, and a person should be mispalel with Groisa Kavana for things that he needs for himself, for his family, for Klal Yisrael. It's something not to be taken lightly whenever you have a situation like this, of 3 Sefer Torah, especially a parsha like this, where you have 8 discrete lanings, when on a normal Shabbos, you only have 1. You only have the parsha Sashavua, and here we're really doubling up quite a bit, all the way up to the number... All the way up to the number 8. Okay, let's now discuss some other ideas. First idea is Chumash VaYikra. Chumash VaYikra, the Medrash says, it is the Chumash which we begin to teach children. When a child comes to Cheder, what is the first thing you teach a child? So when I was a child, the first thing we learned was Bereishis Boro Elokim. In first grade, we learned Bereishis. The Medrash says that's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to teach VaYikra El Moshe. What I've heard is that they do this today. Today it became trendy that at least you teach them the first pasuk. Before the Rebbeim in Cheder, they still teach Bereishis, but before they teach Bereishis, in order to fulfill what it says in the Medrash, that the first thing you should teach a child is VaYikra. The Medrash means you teach them Chumash VaYikra, not the story of Bereishis, but at least to preserve the what it says in the Medrash, they teach at least the first pasuk in Chumash VaYikra. And the question is why? So the simple explanation, the Medrash itself says, Yavoi Tehorim V'yasoik B'Taharos. Chumash VaYikra is the parasha of the Chumash of Tahara. By bringing Karbanos, we purify ourselves. L'fnei the Ribbono Shel Olam, children are pure. Children, Shaloi Tamu, they are the people of Shaloi Tamu Tam Chet. So it's fitting that the Tahirim, the Tinoikos Shel Beis Rava, who are Tahirim, shall come and they should busy themselves with Taharos, Chumash Vayikra, Parsha of Tahara. Okay, that is the Pshuta Shel Mikra. However, many of the commentators, they elaborate upon this idea, upon what's the uniqueness of children learning with the Medrash, the requirement, the directive of the Medrash to teach children Chumash Vayikra. A very popular idea is the first pasuk, the second pasuk, Daber al bnei Yisrael v'yibarta alehem Adam. Rashi comments, why do we use the word Adam in this pasuk? To teach you, just like Adam was all alone, the entire world belonged to him, so too, it was impossible for Adam to bring a carbon, Gezel, because the entire world was his property. Likewise, in our day and age, when a person brings a carbon, he has to be the owner of the carbon. If a person brings a carbon from Gezel, mitzvah haba ba'avera, the carbon is invalid. Adam owned the entire world, Rashi, by the words of Rashi. Adam lama ne'mar, ma Adam harishayin, Adam harishna hikriv min ha-gezel, sha'kol hoya shaloi af atem loy takrivu min ha-gezel. And that is the most important thing to teach a child. When a child starts out, you teach the child, keep your hands to yourself. Teach him integrity, honesty. That's why the tradition is to teach children Eilu Mitzias. The first Gemara is to teach Eilu Mitzias Shaloi, the Eilu Chayav Lahachris. When you find something in the street, it's not yours. It's not necessarily yours. It might belong to someone. You have an obligation to look, examine. Maybe you can find the simon. You can return to its proper owner. The first thing you teach is honesty, integrity. Because if a person does not have this nida, later on in life, he's going to find himself in a lot of trouble. Okay, that's another time why it's important to teach this concept. And there's another idea, many other reasons. This I saw a very nice idea of the Sefer, is Vayikra, because this pasuk begins with humility. Vayikra, why is there in Vayikra small? Why is there a small aleph on Vayikra? Why is there a small aleph zira? It's the humility of Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayikra means a calling of endearment. Vayikar, when you omit the aleph, vayikar, it's an expression of thy chance. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Bilam, it says vayikar Hashem leBilam. Hashem, just by chance, he met Bilam. Hashem spoke to Moshe with endearment. Vayikra, Lashon of Chiba, Rashi says, as the Malachim, they call one to the other, the Korah, Zel, Zev, Yamar, so Lashon Shel Chiba, Shemalachi Hashareis Mishtam Shemboi. So Moshe, in his humility, did not want it to be known that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to him with love. He would have preferred, in his humility, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be known, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to him no different than Bilam. Just he was an instrument of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to assist the Jewish people. So Moshe, in his humility, he wrote the letter Aleph small, Aleph Zira. This is the most important thing you can teach a child, to be humble, to be humble. Humility is the key. There's a famous Chazal, Anavim, Anavim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to announce the Geula, HaKadosh Baruch Hu announces it. Today it's a very popular song. Anavim, Anavim, Higiu, Zman Geulaschem. And Anava is one of the most, if not the most important midah that a person needs to survive in this world. And dealing with a child, when a child enters into the world of chinuch, it is critical that he should be taught the lesson of Anava. And the Rebbe will be forced to teach this to him when he encounters the Aleph Zira. And the child's going to ask the Rebbe, Rebbe, why is the Aleph in Vayikra small? It's to teach Anava. But it goes further. I saw this a beautiful idea in the Sefer. I don't remember the name of the Sefer, but he says that Aleph also means greatness. What is Aleph? Aleph means Aluf. Aluf in modern Hebrew was one, a general. A general. Aluf means greatness.
Yeah, the
Aluf. Aluf means greatness. Aleph also represents humility. It's the first letter of the Aleph. It represents nothing. It represents, and especially here where it's very, very small. How could the letter Aleph, mitzad echad, mean the first, the very, very beginning, which in essence means humility? And in fact, here in this pasuk, Vayikra, it's spelled a small Aleph, to teach you the lesson of humility. And yet the very same letter, Aluf, represents greatness, godless. It's a contradiction. Is the Aleph, is it, how can you make an Aleph small? Put it like that. If the letter Aleph means Aluf, greatness, how can you take the letter Aleph, how can Moshe Rabbeinu take the letter Aleph and miniaturize it to teach you the lesson of Anova? That's a contradiction. Doesn't make any sense. He should take the do something else to indicate humility. You can't go take the letter Aleph and make the Mahus, the essence of Aleph is greatness. And you're taking the greatness and you're diminishing it down to nothing? My high. The answer is, Aleph is also the word, when you spell the word Aleph, Aleph, Lamed, Pei. Backwards, Pei, Lamed, Aleph is Pella, a wonder. What is a wonder? What is the meaning of a wonder? Well, every single day we say multiple times, Asher Yotzar, and the bracha concludes, Roifei Chol Basar Umafli La'asos. Hashem does wondrous things. And none other than the first Simon Shulchan Aruch, it explains to us what is the meaning of Mafli La'asos. What's the pella, the wondrous things that Hashem does in creation? The wondrous things are that Hashem is able to take two opposites, two things which are contradictory one another, a guf, a davar shel gashmi, the human being, which comes from the earth, and to connect it to a neshama, a davar shel ruchni. How is it possible to synthesize a davar shel ruchni with a davar shel gashmi? This is an impossibility. Yet Hashem does wonders, umafli la'asos, for the Ribbono shel Olam to take a davar ruchni and be mitzaref it, to synthesize davar shel gashmi, is a pella, is a wonder, umafli la'asos. That's exactly what the letter Aleph is. The letter Aleph, Aleph, Lamed, Pei. Backwards is Pei, Lamed, Aleph, Pella. It's a wondrous letter. And what's the wondrous nature of the letter Aleph? Mitzad Echad, it represents greatness. Mitzad Sheni, it represents humility. Because it's the beginning. And Moshe Rabbeinu, we emphasize the humility of the Aleph by miniaturizing the Aleph. This is the lesson you teach a child. The most important thing to teach a child is strive for greatness. Strive. The greatest thing you can instill in a child is she'ifas, is to yearning to be great. They say this a lot about the good that certain yeshivas. You'll come out knowing nothing. You'll come out of big amaretz, but you'll have an appreciation for godless. You'll have a she'ifa. You'll have a yearning, and the rest of your life you'll work catching up to become accomplished people in every dimension. What are you going to gain in the first 4 years in high school? No, you're not going to know too much. You'll know a few little things here and there. But the main goal is you should come out with an appreciation of greatness and a yearning for greatness. And good luck now. You have the rest of your life to catch up of what everyone thinks in their wildest dreams you should have already learned in the 4 years of high school. That's an account. You go to a high school, they teach you a lot, but when you come out of high school, all this is just boring material to me. I have no desire. The rest of your life, you'll never open up a Gemara. You'll never have any yeshiva. That's a problem. The greatest, the most important thing you put in a child is a she'ifa, a yearning for greatness. But there's a danger. When you think you're great, this arrogance, it comes with the territory, with greatness, or she'ifa, the gaiva, the kedusha, right? It comes with the territory, gaiva, arrogance, being the superiority complex. Then you have to teach the child, listen here, we're teaching you godless, but you're nothing. You're an Aleph. Humble yourself. You're nothing. How could it be? How you talking? Can it be that you're telling me to strive for greatness and I should have a real sense that I'm a nothing? It's a contradiction. That's right. That's the letter Aleph. Aleph is a Pella. It's a wonder. The nature of a Pella is opposites, is the ability to be one human being, and within that one human being to have within the both the opposites, the God, the greatness, Mitzad Echad, and the humility, the little Aleph, the humility of Aleph. It's Takapella, to be able to synthesize both extremes in one human being. Powerful lesson. All rooted, all hinted to in the very first word of Vayikra, in Vayikra, El Moshe. Okay, now, let's go further in Vayikra. Vayikra El Moshe, let's just do that. What Rashi goes and elaborates, he explains what Vayikra is a Lashon Shel Chiba. It's a Lashon of endearment. What's the endearment? He quotes the Pasuk, the Malachim. the Malach HaShavetz make use of this expression, V'kora Zeh El Zeh V'yomar. So since we find the Malach HaShavetz make use of this word V'yikra, V'kora, and Hashem speaks V'yikra El Moshe, so Hashem spoke to Moshe with Chibos. So I ask you the question, not my question, everyone is, before Hashem asks this question, just because the Malachi HaShavetz, they call one another with Vayikra, how does that show the Malachi HaShavetz love one another? Maybe they're cold litvaks, the Malachim. Whoever told us the Malachim are Hasidish, they wear Streimlich. Maybe, who did they call one another? What's the big deal? So you shatter one another. Vayikra means Chiva? Where do you see it means Chiva? Where do you see it means Chiva? The answer is, well, we really explain this every single day in davening, when we explain in more detail how they communicate one another, what exactly are they doing when they're calling one to another? Derech Eretz. In davening, we explain v'noisnim rishus zeh lo zeh lahakdish liyoyt shem benachas ruach. The korah is netilas rishus. That, without any question, is chiba, is an expression of love. When you have the sensitivity and the derech eretz, not to step on someone else's wings, not to cause harm to someone else, that is chiba, sensitivity. So v'kara zel zev yamar is netilas rishus, as we say, v'naisim rishus zel lo zeh. So it's beyond the shadow of a doubt, Vayikra is Lashon Chiba, is an expression of love. So now in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vayikra El Moshe, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is calling to Moshe, there is an expression of love. Now it can't mean Hashem is asking Moshe Rishus, obviously it doesn't mean that, but we know that the word is associated with Chiba, the ultimate Chiba of Mithilas Rishus, so it makes sense. And also if it's... Yeah.
But if you go a little bit after that, it says...
No, but they're getting rishus first. First they get rishus, and then they do their thing. But they do it with their cheretz. When they do their thing, they do it barash gadol, but they first don't begin until they have permission. Okay, you have to have rishus. But now this also, it fits perfectly, this idea, this is not my vart, but it fits perfectly as a continuation of the end of Parashas Pekudei. At the end of Parash Pekudei, the last, the end of Chumash Shemos, it concludes, V'lo yachol Moshe lovoy el oil moyet, ki shochan olav he'anon, uchvoyed Hashem molei es ha-mishkan. Moshe was unable to enter the oil moyet because the Shekhinah was resting there. And when the, when he'lo se'anon me'al ha-mishkan, and when then it goes on, when the cloud lifted, they traveled. So the last theme of the Parash is Moshe, why can't you enter? Who's holding you back? Very nice, there's the tent, there's the Mishkan, there's a cloud. Go in. Who's holding you back? What, you're chained down physically? Someone is tying you down? Enter into the oil moid to go talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe says, I'm not going in there without permission. You're right. No one's physically restraining me from going into the oil moid. There's no physical restraints. But it's not Derech Eretz for me to walk into the Mishkan until the Ribbono Shel Olam gives me Rishus. So therefore, that's why now Chumash Vayikra begins Vayikra El Moshe. Vayikra is associated with Rishus. V'kara Zel Zev Yamar V'chulam Noisim Rishus Zelo Zeh. So when Hashem is speaking to Moshe, it's Lashon Chiba, Hashem is saying, Moshe, I give you Rishus. Come, enter into the oil moed. It's a perfect continuity between the end of Chumash Shemos and the beginning of Chumash Vayikra V'lo Yachol Moshe Vayikra Netilas Rishus. He now comes and enters into the Mishkan. Now let's go a little bit further with this idea of Netilas Rishus. Rashi goes on, this is very powerful. Rashi says, he describes how Hashem's Dibur worked. It was not like the Dibur of Basar Vidam, it was special sound which only Moshe Rabbeinu heard. And then Rashi goes on to say, when it says Vayikra, I would think that there was a Lashon Chiba even for the silent moments. Now Rashi says that Hashem did not always speak to Moshe. There were times when Hashem spoke to Moshe, and there were times when Hashem did not speak to Moshe. by design, in order to give Moshe Rabbeinu enough time, revach lehisbeinen bein parsha leparsha ubein inyan leinyan. Moshe Rabbeinu is a human being, and a human being needs time to reflect, time in order to absorb the lessons. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped every so often to give Moshe Rabbeinu time to absorb the lessons that have been taught, that have been transmitted. Revach space, or in this instance time, lehisbeinen, in order to reflect, to collect his thoughts, to fully grasp the message, the lesson of Hashem, bein inyan leinyan ubein parsha leparsha. Rashi says, I would think that during those times, during those moments when Hashem was silent, there was chiba, there was love, there was also kriya. So Rashi says, no, during those moments of time, it's vayidaber. In other words, I'll read the words of Rashi. It's a very strange Rashi, very overfarshed. They struggle with this Rashi. What is Rashi really trying to say over here? Rashi says, Yochol, I would think that there was kriya, there was calling of love, af lechaf sokois, even during the moments of time when there was no communication. Af lechaf sokois, hoiso kriya. Talmud loymar. It's very, come on, first Rashi, Talmud, second Rashi, Talmud loymar, vayidaber. It says also, Vayikroel Moshe Vayidaber. What's Vayidaber? Lidibur Hoysa Kriya. Deloyle Hafsakas. When Hashem spoke, there was love, but not when Hashem was mafsik. Umohoyu Hafsakas Visham Shais Lidin Revach Moshe, let's spend many bin Parshal Pash. Okay, he goes on to explain what the purpose is to give him the Revach. What is going on over here? What is this all about? That only when Hashem spoke, there is kriya, but when Hashem did not speak, then there's no kriya. That's obvious, no? If Hashem is not talking to you, if Hashem is not speaking to you, if He's not speaking to you, there's no kriya. There's nothing being said. So, what does that mean? There was dibur though. Vayidaber, during the dibur, there was kriya. But when there was no dibur, when Hashem was silent, then there was no kriya. Isn't that obvious? Isn't that self-understood? If Hashem is not speaking, so there's no communication. There's no communication, so of course there's no kriya. There's no dibur, there's no kriya. What does Rashi mean? So let me tell you a drush, and what this means. In Yados, we actually touched upon this yesterday, and we spoke about halacha lemoshe misinai. There are halachas, there are things that we do in Yados that are explicit. Shulchan Aruch, Sukkim of the Torah. The Aseres Adibros, believe it or not, in Aseres Adibros it says Lesirtzach. Lesirtzach, Lesinef, Letignoiv, Lesane. Okay? There are Ashabis, there are things that are explicit in the Aseres Adibros. There are things that are explicit in Chamishe Chumshe Torah. And then we have a Shulchan Aruch that tells us all the fine points, all the details. And then in Yados, there are things that are intangible, invisible. There's no makar. There's a big spectrum. There are minhagim. Some of the minhagim are recorded in Shulchan Aruch. Some are not. And then there are just certain things. You can go all the way down to the extreme where there are certain things that we do. It doesn't say anywhere. It doesn't say anywhere in Shulchan Aruch that Erev Yom Kippur you should not play cards. Okay, Erev Yom Kippur, do you play cards? I mean, this is an old example from 100 years ago. Okay, today we have much more sophisticated things to do with our time. But people in olden days, before there was internet, before there was... So what do? They play cards. They bet, whatever. Kvitloch. Does it say anywhere, in any sefer, in any Jewish halachic sefer, that Erev Yom Kippur, you don't play cards? Doesn't say it anywhere. So I can do it, right? Well, technically you can do it, but should you do it? You know, because Erev Yom Kippur, you don't play cards. It's pashut. Your life is on the line. It's not the time to play cards. Erev Yom Kippur, 5 minutes, you're going into Davi Yom Kippur, you put on a talus. It's a holy day. It's not the appropriate thing to do. Okay, you can go give 1,000 examples like that. There are things that you just don't do. Why don't you do it? Because when a person is a Ben Torah, a person spends his time davening and learning and doing mitzvahs, you become a different person. And mimela, it overflows into your daily activities, the way you behave. And if you're going to ask the person, why are you doing this? Because that's what you do. It's pasha. That's how an Orthodox Ben Torah behaves. You don't do certain things. These are called the intangibles, Rabbi Per. I read a whole article about Rabbi Per. Rabbi Per, the Rashi of Far Rockaway. He calls these are the intangibles of Yadus. And he, I don't remember what he said exactly, but he writes that our ancestors, our grandparents, they were moiser nefesh for the intangibles. Today we live in a very dangerous world where not only where everything's under attack from within, even things that it says in Shulchan Aruch are under attack, but certainly the intangibles are under attack. They're under attack. Why are you doing this? What does it say in Shulchan Aruch to do this? Well, that's how an Orthodox Jew behaves. Okay, we'll talk about a lot of things with the very, very modern Orthodox challenge of women. The role of women in the Orthodox society. Why can't the woman give the drasha? Let the woman come into the Beis HaKnesses during, before Musaf. She should stand in front of the Aron HaKodesh and she should give the drasha. Show me in Shulchan Aruch where it says that a woman can't stand in the Beis HaKnesses in front of the Aron HaKodesh before Musaf and give the drasha to the tzibur. Show me. It doesn't say it anywhere. You'll not be able to find any source why a woman can't do this in front of the Aron HaKodesh before Musaf to give the drasha. It's just, it's not done. It's not the right thing. Okay, we know it's not the right thing. It's not done. This is not tradition. This is just not the way. You're talking about Messiah. It's the intangibles. And in ancient, and not that long ago, people were moiser nefesh to preserve the intangibles because it captures the flavor. The flavor of Yadus. We have over here. I'm sorry. Did they do that in Kingsway? They don't do that. Right. Women
during the,
before Musaf.
No, during
after.
Musaf, after
Musaf.
Daughter.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got into trouble. I'm sorry.
After Musaf.
After Musaf. Right. After Musaf. From which side? The men's and women's section. What?
To everyone.
But where do they speak from? The men's or the women's section? The men's section? Okay. So I'm sorry if I offended. I'm sorry. So this is not a good example. After davening, not before Musaf.
Yeah,
so I'm safe.
Whoever wants to stay.
Right. So it's right. Not during davening itself. So I'm still good. I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry. I don't mean to offend anyone. Chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom. So just different examples. You understand. Different examples. So I want to suggest the solace. Over here, this is what Rashi is coming to bring out, a very powerful concept. We have over here, v'koro ze el ze v'yamar. V'koro ze el ze v'yamar means netilas rishus. It also means dialogue. The karaz zel zev yamar. You have the malachim. The malachim are having a conversation. You go first. Who's going to go? Every single these people that come to the front door. Kavanat Torah. You're a kohen. You're a shiva. You're a this. You're a that. There's a dialogue. The karaz zel zev yamar. Kriya. Rashi. When was there dialogue? When was there netilas rishus? When was there chiba? Bishas dibur. When the Ribbono Shel Olam was speaking, what the Ribbono Shel Olam spoke is written here in the Chumash and is explained in the Shulchan Aruch. But then there are moments of Hafsakas when Hashem didn't speak. Those moments of Hafsaka are sacred because those moments of Hafsaka are also Torah. You know, you have that blank space between each letter. If you don't have blank space between each letter, then the same Torah is possible. You have to have blanks between the parashios. The hafsoka is the blank space is when Hashem did not speak. That represents the intangibles. Playing cards, Erev Yom Kippur. The intangibles. Rashi says, during the hafsoka / the intangibles, there is no kriya. Isn't that self-understood? No, it's not self-understood. Because when you'll take this example, playing cards, Erev Yom Kippur, someone will come to you and say, why not? Let's play cards, Erev Yom Kippur. We'll get into the spirit of Yom Kippur. By playing cards, we'll go to Las Vegas, Erev Yom Kippur, go to a casino, and we'll lighten up, we'll put us in a happy frame of mind of vacation every Yom Kippur to go to Las Vegas. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah. It doesn't say anywhere, and show me where it says he can't do this. Show me. Show me. I'm very receptive. I'm very open-minded. Show me where it says I can't do this. If you'll show me a Makar, then I'll accept it. But it doesn't say anywhere. Quiet. The Torah doesn't say. But do you do this? Do you go play cards Erev Yom Kippur? You don't go to Las Vegas Erev Yom Kippur to play cards. You don't do this. Why not? Hey, Rabbi, say, please. You don't do this Erev. Why not? Because you just don't do it. Also, is there a kriya? Should we have a conversation about this? Should there be a dialogue? Should we play cards? Should we not play cards? We'll have a symposium. We'll have a whole discussion. We'll take a referendum. We'll vote on this. Chiba! You have an idea? I have an idea. Let's discuss. Nitilas Rishus. Respect. Let me have some respect for you. You want to play cards. You know, it's a great idea. We should talk about it. Maybe we should think about it. Maybe we could do it in a proper way. Rashi says, guess what? For the intangibles, there's no kriya. There's no dialogue. Don't engage in dialogue. There's nothing to discuss. There's no conversation for this. When it comes to halacha, you want to take out the Sefer Torah for the parish of the Nasi? Or you don't want to take out the Sefer? You want to read from the Chumash? You want to read from the Sefer Torah? Oh, halacha! It says in Shulchan Aruch, the minhag is to read the Nasiim. Oh, if it's kriya, if it's something which was the spoken word, Hashem said, and it was recorded in the Chumash, and it's in Shulchan Aruch, and it's recorded, there's kriya, there's halacha. You're dealing with something that's in Shulchan Aruch, you can have a discussion. You can have a dialogue to discuss it. When it comes to the flavor of Yados, there's no kriya. Either you got it or you don't. Either you got it or you don't. If the person is on a madrega where he says to you, I'm going to play cards, come with me, and he wants to spend the whole day debating the issue, don't debate the issue with him. It's a free world. You want to play cards? Play cards. We're not getting into a discussion. If you don't have the sensitivity of why it's wrong to play cards, then you're missing something very fundamental in your life. And I'm not going to be able to fill in that gap through intellectual debate of why it's wrong to do so. If you don't have the sensitivity, you don't have the sensitivity. There is no vikoro zel zeh if for the intangibles. There's a vikoro zel zeh when you're dealing with halacha. There's the Ramah, there's the Mechaber, there are the Sfardim, the Ashkenazim, there are Minhagim, Minchabad, Minchsatra, Minchlita, Eda Hachare, you can do whatever you want, Eda HaMizrach, you can do whatever you want. But when it comes to matters of sensitivity, of just you don't do certain things, it's not up for discussion. It's either you got it or you don't, and if you engage in dialogue, you're creating a churban. A churban will come from giving any legitimacy to such ideas because it's not tangible. It's a whole different approach. Okay, let's go. Let's a little bit almost out of time. Let's just do another vart. Okay, I want to. Okay, here's an interesting idea. I'll bring an idea. A little bit drush, a little bit halach, a little bit more pshat. This is a very interesting idea. We have over here the parasha. I bring a carbon. And we have a carbon ani. If a person is supposed to bring a carbon for a carbon, okay. So we know that a person brings. Let's go back to the end of the parish. Let's focus over there. Let's the parish where we bring a tumas mikdash v'kodashot. There is a set of sins for which if a person is wealthy, he brings an animal. If he's poor, he brings two birds. And if he's very poor, what does he bring? He brings a mincha. Dalei dalas. Now here's the problem. This is a very popular question, and I want to bring out a point, interesting point, which touches upon many things. If a person is wealthy, when it comes to this set of korbanos, let's say Tumas Mikdash Vikardash, a person enters into the base Hamikdash in the state of Tumah. So if he's wealthy, what does he bring? He brings a korban chatas. Pasuk says, Vehevi es ashamoy la Hashem, his guilt offering. Al chatasa sherchata nikeva minatzayna kispa aisiras izim lechatas. One animal. You have a choice. Either a sheep or a goat. Pick. That's it. Just pick an animal. A sheep or a goat. You bring an animal. It'll cost you a nice amount of money, whatever it costs, and that is your carbon. But what? And this is called a carbon chatos, a sin offering to atone for the sin. In this example of tumas mikdash v'kadoshav, the enters into the base of mikdash in the state of tumah. Or other examples as well, but let's just focus on one for right now. What happens if you can't afford to bring a kivsa or a seira, a female goat, a female sheep or female goat, as a chatos? Okay, bring two birds. Two birds. Why two birds? Why not? What are the two birds? One bird a chatos, and one bird a carbon oila. And the way you bring a chatos and an oila are very different. Chatos goes, the blood is sprinkled lamala, and the oil of the blood is sprinkled lamata by a bird, and one of them you break its neck, one you don't break its neck, you yavdil, you separate, they're very different. The way you bring the chatos, you eat, the kohen eats the bird, and the oil is completely burnt. Question, if a person was wealthy, he would bring one carbon, a carbon chatos. Now that he's poor, why does he also have to bring a carbon oila? Let him just bring a carbon chatos, a bird chatos. If you want to go say, since it's so small, so let him bring two birds. Let him bring two birds for a carbon chatos, instead of one bird as a carbon chatos. Why does he bring only one bird chatos and one oila? Who needs the oila? You're coming to replace what a rich man would have done. He would have brought an animal as a chatas. Now that you can't afford an animal, you bring a bird. So bring one bird as a carbon chatas. And if you go and tell me that a bird is so shach, it's so insignificant, so you need to bring two, so bring two birds as a carbon chatas. Why is one bird a chatas, one bird a carbon oil? So what's the most common answer to this very, very popular question? Is that the poor man is bitter. He's bitter that he's poor. The rich man, he's rich, he's happy, right? He has the money. The poor man, not only did I do an Avera, I come to the Beis HaMikdash with bitterness that I can't even afford to bring an animal. So he needs to atone for his attitude of bitterness for being poor. What is an oila mechaper? On machshava. Chazal said that carbon oila is mechaper for thoughts. So he's bringing an oila to mechaper on his thoughts, his complaint, his attitude in his mind, that he has a complaint against Hashem that I'm poor. Now there's another very brilliant answer. I think it's in the Meshech Chachma, and I want to use that to bring out another point. Meshech Chachma says a very fascinating answer. When the rich man brings the animal, what happens to the animal, the chatas? Well, the meat is eaten by the kohanim. The blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach. And the fats of the animal are offered on the fire of the mizbeach. Correct? There are really three parts. The meat, the hide, besides the hide, but the meat is eaten by the kohanim, the blood is sprinkled, and the forbidden fats are offered on the fire of the mizbeach. When the poor man brings a bird in exchange for an animal, there are only two parts. There are no fats in a bird. You sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach, and the meat is given to be eaten by the meat is eaten by the kohanim. But there is nothing that is offered on the fire of the mizbeach. Nothing is being burnt in the fire of the mizbeach. So the Meshech Chachma says, therefore, to account for the lack, the absence of the fats being offered on the mizbeach, the poor man must offer a carbon oila, bird oila, and the entire bird will now be burnt on the fire of the mizbeach. The reason why you are going to offer, the poor man has to bring in addition to the chatas a oila, is to compensate for not bringing an animal. If he would have brought an animal, the fats would have been burnt on the fire of the mizbeach. the fire of the Mizbeach also is entitled to a portion of the carbon. So, the poor man that bringing a chatos bird, the chatos bird, nothing of that bird is going to be burnt on the Mizbeach. The blood goes on the Mizbeach and the meat is eaten entirely by the Kohanim. In order to give something to the fire of the Mizbeach, he has to now bring a bird, an oila, and the entire bird is going to be burnt on the top of the Mizbeach. Okay, now, here is where we want to suggest an idea. Going back to the parasha of the carbon, the beginning of the parasha, we learn that the Kohanim, when they bring the animal on the fire, they put on the fire the Aruchu b'nei Aharon HaKohanim es hanesachim es horosh v'esapoder, the head and the fats. Rashi asked the question, we almost finished. Why the head and the fats? So Rashi here says the poder to teach you a very powerful lesson. Lama nemar lamdcha shemaleu im harosh umechaseh by a space hashrita. V'zehu derech kovoid shel maila. An incredible chiddush. When you bring a carbon, what are you really trying to do? When you bring a carbon, you're really bringing yourself. I should be the one who should offer, give up my life to Hashem as a consequence of sinning. But Hashem does not want human sacrifice. So what should I do? So I have to send a representative, or at least try to imagine the best that I can of what I really should have done. We take an animal. The animal is my replacement. It's not a real replacement, but it's the best that we can do in order to express our will that we really should give our own neshamas to you, Hashem. We take an animal, and we look the blood. It should be my blood. The fat should be my fat. A person is my representative. So when you put on the mizbeach, the animal, you take the head, and you see the base hashrita, you see the place where the knife cut the animal, you see the location, the reminder of the death, of the sacrifice of the animal. The Torah says, when there is sacrifice to Hashem, it has to be done with dignity, like we said with the Eklasov. Dignity, it's not proper to give up your life, l'shem, or to sacrifice anything in your life, l'shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with bitterness, or with just disgust, or any type of negative expression. Sacrifice demands dignity. We all heard many stories in the Holocaust of people who didn't just give up their life, al kiddush Hashem. They gave up their life, al kiddush Hashem, with dignity. Look at the famous story with Rabbi Chanan Wasserman and his Talmidim, how he told them that we are karbonis, and by a karbona, a kavana can disqualify, a thought can disqualify a karbon, and we give up our lives to Hashem because we are Jews. We have to do it with dignity, with kavana, so it should be it should be acceptable before a nachas ruach for Hashem. He trained his Talmidim to die al kiddush Hashem with the utmost dignity. Rav Shimon Schwab did not go to sleep in his pajamas because he lived in Germany and he believed that they would come to him in the middle of the night and they would hang him up from a pole. And he did not want the goyim to come and see the Rabina should be hung from a pole in his pajamas. The Rabina, when he dies, al kiddush Hashem, should die in his big day Shabbos with dignity. The kiddush Hashem should be with dignity. This, the makar, that sacrifice is done with dignity, and by, you know, you live al kiddush Hashem, person can sacrifice things that are important. Every sacrifice with dignity is the makar, comes from this parasha, where it says, es horosh v'esapoder. Don't put the head of the animal on the mizbeach with the base hashchita exposed. It's disgusting. It's dignity. It's sacrifice, but it has to be dignified, and the dignity is expressed through covering the place of incision with the fats. Okay, now let's now go back. Take this yisoid and go back to the birds. Well, Mamash winding down right now. When it comes to the birds, there's another very bizarre halacha with regard to birds. There is no shechita. Why is there no shechita? Why did the Torah invent a new type of sacrifice for a bird called Malika? The kohen takes his fingernail and he puts it in the back of the neck to kill the bird. Why can't it be done like in the slaughterhouse with shechita, blood, the whole thing? Why? So I want to suggest, based upon the yisoid of the Meshech Chachma, when you bring a bird chatas, are there any fats? What does the Meshech Chachma say? The only reason why we need the oila is because the bird chatas has no fat.
That's right.
And therefore, because there are no fats, the fire of the Mizbech also deserves something. So therefore, we have to have an oila to burn the oila. If you're going to do a shechita on a bird, a regular standard shechita, like an empire, there's nothing to cover the base hashechita. There are no fats in the bird to put on the shechita. There's no way to fulfill es haroish the es apoder. There's no way to maintain dignity. The sacrifice of the bird doesn't have dignity. Therefore, by the same yisoid, there's no fats. That's why we need the oila. There's no fat. Rashi says that the fats have to cover the base hashechita. We have to invent a new type of netilas neshama. Malika is more dignified, because not that it's more dignified in the time of death, but it means you don't see as much. When you'll be putting it on the mizbeach, you're not going to see blood. You're not going to see a cut. It's from the back of the neck. It's discreet. It's in the back of the neck. It's not done with a knife. It's done in one motion. There's less blood, obviously. It's discreet. It enhances the dignity.
An incredible thing.
The dignity of the bird. Yeah. It's the same you saw it. This,
and the kohen is allowed to eat it also, right?
Right.
It's not kosher.
No. But the Torah says yes.
Yeah, I understand.
In order that the sacrifice, the dignity of sacrifice should be preserved, ad kedei kach, we have to go and come up with a new form of netilas neshama called malika. It's a chiddush to say this, but perhaps I'm building upon the Meshech Chachma, and I'm building upon what it says v'feirish in the pasuk lama nemar lelamdicha. The Torah demands covered shalmaila. So Rabbi Sai, we have over here parsha of korbanos, but a very critical element that between the lines of the korbanos is dignity, korbanos sacrifice. Sacrifice the Ribbono Shel Olam is essential. It's the aleph beis of yadus, but it also requires dignity, the kavod on Shel Yisrael. Have a wonderful Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh. We will.